Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
A massive thank you to Jenny Green. It's Friday, the 24th of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we talk to one of Cork's finest, not you, Donegal, about a solo run with a difference.
Comes back over towards Aidan Walsh, picked up by Seamus Harnady. He has to pull the trigger. Oh, back in the net!
Sam Bennett tells us about how he's preparing for the busiest autumn of his sporting career.
Here comes Sam Bennett. He's leading everybody out to go on his wheel right now. He's trying to bridge over to this pair up front. Mohoric with Benacor. He's going to sell by there, both of them. And here he comes. You want power? Then have some of this. Have plenty of it as well. And look at the gap. He's sailing away. Everybody else is in his wake, almost literally in the rain. And Sam Bennett is going to bring this one home. Sean Kelly's on his feet. Oh, and everybody Irish is celebrating here.
And this week's frontline hero is three-time All-Star Dan the Man Shanahan.
I can't wait. All that and much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or we'd love to see your tweets on Game on 2FM. Marie, how are we doing?
Absolutely fantastic. It's Friday.
You made it.
I made it. We've put down another week without sport and we're doing okay.
We're doing it. But to be fair, there is loads of sport going on.
It's actually really enjoyable.
Yeah. I'd say you were glad today that Liverpool aren't playing in the Netherlands League. What would you call it? Maybe I've got that wrong. They have called it all square, Marie. It's no one wins a title. No one goes down. All still. Tough luck.
It's harsh, isn't it?
Yeah. The Dutch League, of course. I went mountain climbing there one time. Wild.
Yeah, Ajax were the ones to lose out there. Yeah, luckily enough for Liverpool that they're not in that same situation yet. But the thing is, everything is changing so quickly that it's hard to know what's coming down the track with finishing leagues, whether they will or not. So many different moving parts that I actually just don't know anymore.
Keep the hope though. That's what we need. So leave Liverpool where they are, leave everything alone for a while and keep us on it.
Okay, let's not think about it too much. But John Tracy did come out today, the Sporting Ireland chief executive, and he said return of non-contact sports will be priority in Ireland. So what I want to know is, what's a good non-contact sport to take up? 51552?
Yeah.
Soccer, our producer says here.
Soccer.
And he's loving it.
Delighted with his own joke. Yeah. Tag rugby, can we go for that? No, no chance.
Golf.
Golf would be a good one.
Tennis.
Yeah.
Canoeing.
Darts.
Snooker.
That's it. 51552. What would you watch? What non-contact sports? They say basketball's non-contact. That's the most physical game you'll ever play.
That is physical.
As opposed to soccer, which is contact but isn't.
Yeah.
Did you see Roy Keane on Sky?
I did.
Oh.
Actually, watching Roy Keane is nearly a physical sport at this stage.
It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was hilarious about the beard.
Yeah, I like that your man thought he was in a safe spot, that he could crack the joke, and then he cracked it, and Roy just handed him his arse.
Roy was having absolutely none of it. None of it.
But what did you think of his comments about the players in the top section, the top clubs, shouldn't take any dip in their salaries? It's their choice. It's business. They'll be quick to throw them out the door. They should get their wages and decide what they do for people outside of it with the money they're on.
Well, I think with Roy, he was looking to situations in his career when he kind of stood up to the billionaire owners, and it's a little bit different because there are people in need now, so it's a different situation. But I think it kind of reflects his mentality. He would never give an inch, and I think that if he bends in any way whatsoever, whether it's in that interview when the guy tried to ask the funny question and he wouldn't humour him, or whether it's give up a little bit, be asked to do something not on his terms, and that's just the way he operates. So it's probably just a reflection of the way that he approaches decision making, and he's always going to think how it affects him and how he will look after it. And I'd say when it comes to dealing with these bosses, he never wants to bend a little bit.
Yeah. As a player in it, though, you would appreciate a senior player or someone that's so respected within the game for saying something like that, because the players that are currently in it possibly can't say it. But someone like that, who's a bit of an authority on and has been there, done it, been a winner and done so much, when he says it, it carries weight, and we're talking about it. What the most cringeful moment was when the presenter asked him, "Who, you haven't got your beard cut in 6 weeks?" And he just nearly looked through him, didn't he? He was like, "Where are you going with this fella?" I was like, "Oh, you haven't earned that fella."
And there was no saving him either, like.
No, there wasn't.
But you should have been able to tell by looking at him that he doesn't trim the beard.
I thought it was tidy enough now, to be fair.
It was really touching the table in front of him.
Okay, fair enough.
And it was like two-tone, two different colours of grey. It's a good video, though. It's on Twitter. Check it out.
Yeah. Can I make a shameless plug?
Donica, of all the people I know, you are the best at making shameless plugs.
Okay,
so go for it.
Yeah, next, strength and conditioning coach of mine, one of the best I've worked with, Fergal O'Callaghan, is involved with NUI Galway. And they have a virtual regatta. It's rowing. It's international sport, Marie. It's this Sunday, the 26th of April. They have 237 athletes from 7 different countries. So they're all there. The British, of course, our own Irish, the French, German, Americans, world record holders, Olympians. And you can watch it, Marie, live international sport on the NUIG Sports YouTube site from 10 past 10 on Sunday morning.
Fantastic. I'm going to pencil it in. I have nothing else on. There isn't even any Joe Wicks at that time. There's nothing.
There's nothing on. And do you know what? You know what I think you'll actually like? They have pre and post match interviews, like they've with the athletes. So, of course, they're not all together doing it. 237 Zooms. That'll be interesting to keep an eye on people. But they've only 40 minutes to do 2K as well. That should be well enough.
It's sport. We'll take it. But I think that this weekend, there is a lot of fundraising going on, and I think it's really important to highlight it, because people, so many sports people and people in general, are making such use of their time in such a selfless way. We've seen Do It For Dan take over the whole social media. John Heslin, who's going to be on with us on Monday, his club are doing a 1,000-kilometre run on Sunday, and loads of the Westmeath footballers are joining in. There's just so much going on, and like, you have to give credit to people for giving so much time to all the charities and just making the most of the lockdown and doing good things.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think it's in shocking circumstances we see the real spirit of our sports stars on and off the pitch. And this weekend again, the Cork Hurlers are stepping up to the mark. They're doing a solo run challenge for 48 hours to raise much needed funds for the incredible Marymount Hospice in Cork. And to discuss this, we're delighted to be joined by Cork Hurler Robbie O'Flynn. Robbie, how are you?
Good, yourself?
We're great. Thanks so much for bunking on. I know this is something that's close to your heart. I know it's important to you because your mom works in Marymount. Isn't that right, Robbie?
Yeah, she's been up there for the past 5 years, so I've known the kind of ins and outs of it. But yeah, obviously, everyone in Cork anyway knows how good the hospital is and all the great work that it does. So yeah, it's just great to kind of contribute in this kind of way.
Robbie, I'm not from Cork, but I have heard of Marymount. I'm not exactly sure, though, what it is. Will you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so it's a hospital, really, where people might go if they're kind of critically ill, if they're in a kind of bad way. So it's kind of comfortable for families to kind of go there and just kind of see their loved ones, basically. And obviously, from like the kind of social distancing and the kind of 2km and stuff, it's very difficult for people to actually visit patients in there at the moment that might be critically ill. So when my mom was telling me about, like, they were kind of trying to raise money for iPads and phones so like patients and kind of family members could have like meaningful conversations with one another. So I kind of said to myself, originally I wanted to raise money for that, but then it kind of grew legs, and we thought that to get everyone involved, we'd do this marathon and try and raise as much money as possible.
Robbie, just on that, for people in critical care, just social distancing at the moment is just, it's unthinkable. Can you give us some examples of what your mum is seeing up there? You know, the restrictions that are in place, you know, how different it is.
Yeah, well, my mom is actually in the, she's part of the reception team in there, so she's not a nurse or a doctor, but yeah, obviously it's again just having those conversations with people. Like, it's obviously a tough scenario to be in. I haven't been up there myself and stuff anytime soon, so I don't actually know, but it's just, there's a few sad stories coming out of there at the moment, yeah.
And in terms of your team at the moment, Robbie, I know it's difficult for teams and sports people to stay connected, and to have this for you to do together, yeah, like just in terms of bonding and team spirit during tough times, it must be quite beneficial for you as a group.
Yeah, no, it was great. Like, I said it to the lads, a few lads in the leadership group or whatever, and they jumped at it and they were delighted, like, to actually do something together, even though we can't actually be kind of together, I suppose. But even management there now, like, they jumped at the idea and they're really encouraging and stuff like that. So, like, even when I put in the kind of message originally into the group chat, like, it's 42, 48 thumbs up within 10 minutes, so it's great, like.
Robbie, I've no doubt your teammates done that because it's an indication of you, but it's also Marymount. It's a special place in Cork, and I know Marie touched on it there, but there's no one in Cork that hasn't been touched by the amazing work
exactly,
they do.
Yeah. I know, everyone even says that. Like, it kind of strikes a chord with everyone. They all have their personal ties with Marymount, so it's a great organisation. They do great work.
So what are you doing, Robbie?
It's actually starting, I'm starting it off in the morning at 6 a.m. We're going to do the run. So it's kind of like a solo run, basically. It'll be in our own back garden, kind of stick to the guidelines and HSC guidelines. So I'll be out the front, and I'll just be videoing it. And what we're going to do is kind of use a time lapse kind of on Instagram. So each person's run will be kind of condensed into about, I'm not sure how long it'll be at the moment, probably about 30 seconds, 60 seconds, and then I'll try and condense it all into the one video, and we'll have a few lads kind of talking before, saying, oh, I'm getting ready to run here now, this is my time, and all this, and kind of urging people to support, so people can actually tune in on the Instagram page as well.
And yeah. Robbie, is there any opportunity situation where it might get competitive? Pat Horgan be doing some tricks in the middle of his one?
I don't know, he'd be doing any tricks at 5 a.m. in the morning. That's his time. But he got caught with the night shift, to be fair to him.
Oh no, how did he sort out the graveyard shift? Because it's 48 hours, isn't it?
I know, yeah. I got all the names, and then I just wrote out the times, and I just used the app, the kind of randomizer app, and I gave everyone a number, and whatever number came out, and I didn't mess with it at all. There was a few lads gave me a few excuses with work, to be fair now, and kind of family, so I said I'd sort them out first, and then after that it was any man's game, like, so yeah.
And Robbie, just in terms of yourself and your fitness, what have you been up to during the lockdown?
I'm just kind of keeping busy the best I can, really. I was lucky enough, I finished up college the day college was actually closed with my last exam, so I'm actually kind of at nothing really at the moment, so I am doing a few programs that the lads send on each week, so that's actually good to kind of stick, have something written down for you to do that you can take off, it kind of helps a lot, like, you know. So I'm kind of using my brother as well, he's coming, so he's benefiting off it as well, so yeah.
So you're a professional hurler is what you're saying?
Stop it, Marie.
That's it, unfortunately.
We know the Cork lads are doing their bit by the 48-hour solo channel. So how can people help out? How can people around Cork, around the country help out, Robbie?
So what they'll do is there's a link. That's kind of the best way to do it on a GoFundMe page. So they're going to be... you can go on it through Instagram. So the Instagram tagline is corkhurling.marymount. Or else you can actually just go onto the Marymount website and you can find the link there. So, it's ideal. But, I just want to say as well, there's thanks to the Munch for the talking about their hurleys and balls, so fellas can actually go through the night with the kind of voluminous yellow balls and their speed balls. So it's great to have even like car companies kind of like getting behind us and stuff like that. Like,
certainly is. Robbie, fair play for what you're doing. I don't think Patrick Horgan will be too pleased with the Loonmas ball when he's on at 4 o'clock in the morning. The guy scores 3-10 and gets the graveyard shift. Well done what you're doing. Marymount's incredible and we hope people get behind you and really support you. Well done. Thanks, Robbie.
Good man. Cheers. Okay. Cheers.
Slán. We'll take a quick break. Game on 2FM. Rhea, I got a kick there when you asked Robbie about being a professional hurler. I think there's one thing with hurlers and footballers. They'd rather be called anything else than professional.
You're so right, yeah. It's like the fear is in them, you know?
You could actually just see his back going up. But fair play to him. Young man there that's actually doing something incredible. And look, of course, his mom's at the forefront to it and an incredible hospice. But it's lovely to see that he's actually getting involved.
And you were dead right. You made the point at the start of the show that this is really bringing communities together and bringing the best out of people in tough times. And fair play to all the sports people because they are the ones leading the line, Donegal.
Yeah, they are, to be fair. They really are. We did last week with Niall Dan's dad, you know, and you just see those moments where people, because that's what sport does. It brings us all together. And it's actually good to see people are using their energy to put it back into the community.
We've had a few texts in about the non-contact sports. Handball.
Very good.
That's a good one.
Road bowling is massive in Cork.
Somebody text in road bowling.
No
is that
way.
You? Show jumping.
Oh yeah, show jumping. Do you know what? Do you know what I'd watch? Whatever about the show jumping. Remember when Eddie Macken used to go over the wall and just have the wall? I wonder what would Ruby clear on a wall.
We can
like
ask him one day.
Top height.
Yeah, I'd say what he's. I think he's doing a bit of that now, dressage in the fields outside the house these days.
Oh, could you imagine him rocking up with a poor old pony?
Yeah. So there is a few that we could take up or get into. Badminton is probably another one. I always liked a bit of badminton.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan though, were you?
Yeah. No, we played it in school. Yeah, it's a good game.
Right. Can we move on?
Where do you go from badminton?
Yeah. Actually, here we are talking about non-contact sports. And surely cycling is a non-contact sport.
Ooh.
Well, we don't know. We'll find out very quickly when Sam Bennett joins us on the line. Sam, how are you?
Not too bad, yourself?
Well, could cycling be a non-contact sport?
It is and it isn't. It depends on what stage of the race it is.
Sam, I've seen you getting led in, and that is all contact in front of you.
Yeah. I think on TV it doesn't really show a lot, but it is a little bit physical.
If it had to be, though, you'd probably find a way if that was the criteria for getting back.
Sorry?
If it had to be, you know, if that was the criteria for getting back, like, you'd find a way.
That's it.
Murray's looking for stabilisers or something, is it, to keep you all at distance?
Yeah.
Look, at this stage, I'll take anything.
Yeah, very true.
Sam, it must be particularly frustrating for you right now with this layoff. Like, you're at home, you've got some of the best roads all around you. Around Carrick on shore, and all you can do is go 2 kilometres.
Yeah, it's frustrating, especially when the weather's like this. It's hard because Ireland doesn't really get this weather that often, but I'm managing. I'm doing. I have a lot of devices at home and some weights, and we have online it's like racing and bike rides on this platform called Zwift. So there's a lot to do, but it's hard not to get out on the road.
Tell us about that, because obviously Swift is handy. It keeps you, you know, road ready, virtual racing. But like, I'm sure there's no devil running beside you up the hill like we normally see in moments like that. You can't get that kind of the skill of the bike and that side of it on it, can you?
No, it's hard. Like, it does feel a lot different than riding on the road. I actually did a race yesterday on another platform, but it was Tour de Suisse, and race against guys I normally race on the road. But it was absolute torture. I got my all time highest heart rate for 1 hour, so it's really really hard. But the Swift is really nice. People at any level can go on, and it's good for training and. Often on the home trainers, like there's like we have a thing called a tax, and you take off the rear wheel, you put the bike on, and it gives you a resistance, so it can replicate what's on the screen, uphill, downhill, flat. So it is really good for the training, because if you're just sitting there looking at the wall or looking at the TV, it can be hard to do. But this actually gives you something to aim for. You can see other riders and race against them. So it is something to get us by at the moment. And also with Irish weather, it's fantastic to have. But I am missing the road.
We had Kevin McManaman on, the Dublin footballer, last night, and we were just talking about the difficulties of trying to perform when there's nobody around, and you know, when you feed off the crowds and your environment. Is that an issue, you know, when you're so used to that kind of the adrenaline that comes with the open roads, to be in your sit room then trying to get to the levels that you need to?
It is. But I've taken this opportunity to fix certain imbalances in my muscles after some accidents, and I'm working on specific work because I wasn't happy with the start of my season, some VO2 max work and some top-end work. So I'm trying to look at it in a different way. I think without the racing, it's really hard to have that race speed, and it takes a while to come back. But I have been the last few years really good to train and do those 25, 35-hour weeks. So training isn't hard thing for me to do, but it is now a little bit harder doing it indoors. But as I said, I'm trying to look at it from a different angle and try and fix problems that I have, so that when I do get the chance to come back in the road, I'm ready to come back. I'm more prepared, and also I'll be motivated as well.
Sam, tell us about the start of your season and why you weren't happy. I know we had you on just before you joined Quickstep, and you were excited about the move. What kind of happened between then and now?
It started, like, the very start was pretty good. Like, I got two wins early on. But then I had UAE Tour, which was kind of cut short with the coronavirus, and then also Paris-Nice the same. But those two stage races, UAE Tour and Paris-Nice, I didn't get a stage win in them. And now I'm in one of the biggest teams in the world, and I'm their lead sprinter. I want to perform. And in the last 2 years, I had like a bit of a run going where I won at least one stage of each stage race I went into, far from Romandy last year. But I had two back-to-back, and I wasn't really happy with that. So I tried some new training techniques, which I'm still happy I did, because I learned a lot that I can take going forward, but I need to go back to my old style of training. But I wasn't really happy not winning, but I don't think any athlete is.
Yeah, Sam, you touched on it there. Like, you'll always look internally at yourself, but moving to a new team, is it getting that dynamic right as well, that they know what they need to do to put you in the place to get the wins?
Yeah, I think there's on the road and also off the bike. You often see it where a lot of top guys, they move, and the first 3, 4, 5 months, they're not themselves, and it takes a while for them to find a flow. And I thought that I would just step in, and wasn't really the case. So I think I'm just finding myself within the team. They're a fantastic team, and it's coming together really quick. So I think just finding that with the staff and the mechanics, the DS, the Soigneurs, and then on the road, getting that rhythm with the guys and really, gelling with them. It will be hard now because we don't have the racing, but I think it'll come.
Sam, I'm watching a documentary at the moment about Movie Star on Netflix, so that makes me a complete expert on cycling. I don't know how you deal with the communication in your ear. Someone shouting in the car for you to go faster when they can barely keep up driving.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I was in previous teams where the information wasn't so good, so I used to take the earpiece out but when they spoke a bit of nonsense. But, I think it is a part of the sport where you need to know if there's dangerous parts of the road coming up, and you need information, and it's something like we get a lot of information with the wind direction when we're coming to the next climb, how long the percentage of the climb, and just generally what we need to do, and also our fueling strategy. So there's a lot of information coming in, and often it can take your mind off the pain, so it's pretty okay.
You mentioned that you did some different training. What did you mean?
Just so I try to focus more on top-end power, and my capacities don't really suit that because I have a high VO2 max, which isn't normally the case for a sprinter, but I have a low lactate building rate. So I don't know. Maybe I'm going into too much detail, but I needed to change it a little bit back to more classics rider's style of training. So just to suit myself.
And just Sam, something you said earlier on about kind of fixing yourself, maybe like myself and Marie were chatting about it. In rugby, an awful lot of players get physio and massage, but obviously that's taken away from you at the moment. And then you're training to your max heart rate. You know, how do you get yourself ready every day?
I do find it hard. I haven't had a massage in a while and I'm building up the weights each week. The weights are going up and up and... then doing the hard efforts and they're explosive. They are hard efforts. I don't know. I just have to keep stretching and try and keep everything at bay. But I'm doing a lot of activation and that's getting everything squared up as well and getting everything nice and even. So doing a lot of that before I exercise and then making sure I have the mobility before I do the efforts just to prevent injury as well.
What's the communication like then with the team? Like, is it every day? Is it Zoom? Like, what are you tracking and what are you doing together?
So the training would go straight onto the platform where the trainer can see it straight away. And then you have different people for different reasons within the team. So we have a WhatsApp for the group chat with the nutritionist who sends us different types of meals to try and with low calories and stuff like that. And then we'd have our psychologists that we can contact. Then we have mechanics if anything go wrong. We have team managers, the director sportif. So there's different people for different, I won't say problems, but for different tasks. There's some people that it might be once a week, the other once a day, but then there's other people that you only really go to when you have a problem. But in general, pour amount of people almost every day. And also now cycling, the sponsorship works on how much exposure we can give them, and because we're not racing, we're not giving them that exposure. But now I'm onto my media guy every day because we have to work a lot on that to give the sponsors that exposure. So the different things now that we're working a lot on.
Wow, it's such an interesting side of it because you're right. Of course, the sponsors are going to want, you know, to reflect their product or even have you put in time with people that they would hold close. Even, I've no doubt, and they've been on for different types of conferences and chats and you're seeing the kind of business side of it.
There's a lot to it, I suppose. Trying to do everything we can to keep the sponsors happy, I suppose. Just keep going until the racing starts, I suppose.
Are you worried when, you know, there is such uncertainty in the economy, in the future of sport and travel and in everything, really?
Yeah, for sure. Like cycling is not only my passion, but it's my job. So, when the economy goes down and the money's not there, the first thing to go is sponsorship. So it's not nice to think about. And then also with the Tour de France, that is cycling. The whole calendar, the whole infrastructure revolves around Tour de France. So that has to happen. And the exposure there with the sponsors, the exposure the sponsors get with Tour de France is huge. So when the racing, like if we're not sure that the racing is going to go ahead, and then with the economy, it can be a little bit stressful, but it's something that I have no control over. All I can do is try my best to be ready for when we start racing again and perform when the time comes. But it is stressful. Stressful because it's my job, and then also I'm not getting any younger. I want to get back to the Tour de France, and I feel like I have the capabilities now to get really good results there. And I don't want the years to go by, another year to go by, where I don't get an opportunity. So I want the season to start again. But obviously, like the health of the general public is the number one priority.
And Sam, like this Tour de France, it's the one that everyone is saying is your big chance to make your mark.
Yeah, I'm now with one the most winning team the last 3 or 4 years. They were the Koenig Quickstep and one of the biggest teams in the world, best support. And I'm after learning a lot about myself the last few years, about getting myself ready, getting into top shape. I'm ready. And I really want to go for it. I don't think I'll get another opportunity like this. It will be hard because the course this year has a lot more climbing in it. There might be only 3 or 4 chances, whereas last year it was, I think, 8 or 10 sprints. So there's a lot less chances, but I have to take it.
What have you learned about yourself? You mentioned it there, that you think is going to benefit you now this time round.
I think... as I said, how to get in shape. Before, it used to just come whenever. And now I can set a date and say, yeah, I'm going to be ready for that. And I think I'm a guy that gets his confidence from his preparation. So when I'm ready, the confidence is there. And I learned a lot from racing at that top level about positioning and how to win races and take the pressure. So it was good to step away from Tour de France the last few years after I had a bad experience there, but I think I'm just matured now, and I'm ready.
Sam, you said it earlier, you control what you can, but if they move the schedule, say, to the autumn, you're taking on the Alps in October instead of July, you know, even just conditions themselves, it's totally different then.
Might suit me, I'm Irish, so a little bit of cold will help.
Hardy, you're hardy.
Exactly. Would you love that though, would you?
To be honest, cycling's such a traditional sport where the calendar has always been the same the last few years. So it would be really different to have the Tour de France at a different point in season. But as I said, I don't want another year to go by where I don't get a chance to ride the Tour de France. So if it comes this year at any time, it's welcome.
Will it be difficult to peak, though, you know, when you've planned so far in advance for something and a date and then it shifts? We've had a lot of sports people on over the last while who had certain goals, whether it be Olympic qualifiers or a first round of a championship, just trying to reset again.
It can be, but when the quarantine first kind of happened, I took 2 weeks off, so I'm treating it like my off season and building again, because I couldn't hold the condition all season. So I dropped it, and now I'm building it again. The only thing that could happen that wouldn't be a help is if I targeted the date and then they put it back another month or 2 months, I wouldn't be able to hold it. So that would be really difficult. But if it goes ahead of the date it's on now, it shouldn't be a problem.
Sam, you must have massive awareness of what's right for your body. Or do you bring a coach with you from someone like Quickstep that knows, or do you lean on someone that knows you inside out? I'm just wondering, with the changeover to coaches, who actually looks after you? Or sorry, changeover from team, who knows how to get the best out of you? Is that something you take responsibility for?
This time it's something that I had to kind of take responsibility of. Obviously, there's a world of people in the team with the world of knowledge, but it's about communicating with them and getting your message across. I did have a coach in the past that I worked very well with, but obviously moving teams, the coaches are assigned to the teams now. So when I moved team, obviously I had to change trainer. It is new, and also to find a rhythm with the trainer, and they kind of all have their own styles. So I think it's something that takes time with as well. But when you're younger, it can be more difficult. But now I know what works for myself. I kind of just have to be stubborn and say what is best for myself, because at the end of the day, it's my career and I have to perform. It can be difficult. When you can move with a coach, it makes the transition really, really easy. But it was a hard few months.
Yeah, of course.
What was the most difficult part of the transition?
I think the training. Also, the contract year went on very long for me last year, longer than we would have liked, and that there's a lot of pressure there with contracts and whatnot. And then when you move over to a big team, there's a lot of expectation, and that was hard, especially when you're changing coach as well, because you want to come into the new season with a bang and win all around you, but it can take time. And then just the transition with the pressure, it is hard, but you just have to stick at it.
That really is a tough pressure in sport, and we're seeing it with fellow pros, even in rugby and soccer. The players that are out of contract at the end of the season, thankfully you've moved away from that, but your fellow pros that are out of contract, what are they saying? Are they nervous?
Yeah, I have a few friends that I train with regularly, and they're nervous. I can see the stress in their face because a lot of top guys, they'd be signed already, or they'd have agreements. They're not supposed to be signed, but they'd have agreements, say, in May, and then the contracts would be signed in August, say. But there's a lot of guys now, they hadn't the opportunity to perform. Their time of the year would be, say, the classics, and the classics didn't happen. So, there's a lot of pressure on those guys. For the teams, they're happy because they can get a rider at a cheaper rate, but yeah, for the riders, it's not really nice.
Yeah, that would be tough. Sam, could you give us some advice? Because you know better than anyone, people love getting out on their bikes. They love throwing on their Lycra and getting out there. There's restrictions at the moment with 2K. What can your, obviously, your cyclist that doesn't have a massive high VO2 max and never lactate, what could they be doing at the moment?
It's a hard one because cycling is such an expensive sport. If you can, getting the home trainers and getting the Zwift is fantastic. You can even set it up in your back garden so you can be outside. But other than that, maybe jogging and running where you can still stay within the 2K of your home and get a good workout. It's about just maintaining and doing what you can. Doing some short 30-minute, one-hour sessions before breakfast, stuff like that to activate different parts of the body. It's a difficult time, but it depends on what you have access to and what. Yeah,
certainly. Sam, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck when you get back out there. We will be shouting you on. Always so proud of you.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Great chatting to Sam Bennett there, Marie. And if you missed it, you can listen back on the podcast. Shameless.
It's your favourite thing to do.
Oh, I love plugging the podcast. Do you know why? 55 minutes. There you go. Nice
clean
little
the house.
Stroll. Have Marie and Dunners and Ruby to keep you company. No harm.
I must say, we're talking about the non-contact sports now. Obviously, in Tour de France and anything that's highly competitive, it's going to be contact. But for taking something up, would you take up cycling?
I my ass is too big for cycling, if I'm completely honest.
Would it not provide a good cushion?
Just any reason to wear Lycra, I'm mad keen, but I don't think I'm built for bikes. Yeah, an awful lot of rugby lads take it up afterwards, but I don't know. I went out with my father-in-law one time and he left me for dead. Paul Hart spanned me out the back, 60k, and I had to fall off the bike. I was wrecked, and I got three punctures, and he didn't even stop for me on the last one. It was like he can make his own way home.
I haven't actually figured out why so many people get into it, though. Like, in middle-aged men in Lycra being the cliche that is thrown around, but like so many of them get into it.
Do you know what? I can understand it if you stop for a nice coffee and a toasted sandwich. Like, I'd cycle 60k for a good sandwich and a cup of tea, wouldn't you?
Is it like the golf for people that don't want to play golf?
That's possibly what it is. It is a lovely way to see a place, though, isn't it? Like, if you're touring around somewhere, France, Italy, Cork, all the major beautiful cities.
You'd want to be fit, though.
Yeah, you would.
Now, Danica, every Friday we feature a frontline hero because without them, we wouldn't be able to get through this crisis, as we have said many, many times. And this week, our hero is Dan Shanahan. Dan, how are things?
Good, thanks, Marie. Thanks
for coming on. So tell us a little bit about what you are doing right now during this crisis.
To believe it, I'm working at the moment. So I'm one of the lucky lads that are working. So I'm, as you know, I deliver home heating oil and different products. So I'm actually mixing with the people. So I'm probably in the middle of it. I was getting in, as I said, being busy, kept going. Every day is busy, like, you know. So it's enjoyable when you're working, like, you know, meeting the people, having a chat there for a few minutes, like, you know, and because a lot of people can't talk or are really on their own. And when you see a few people that are willing to talk then for a few minutes, it really breaks up their day for me, I suppose, like, you know.
So how often now on a daily basis would you deliver oil to someone and they want to talk to you about hurling?
It's fairly regular, to be honest with you. We can also, especially with the matches being replayed and stuff like that lately, there's a lot of questions being asked, like, you know. But no, it's enjoyable. So I just look back with the good old years that when you were playing, like, you know, the enjoyment we brought to people, and when they reminisce on the good times we had with Waterford, like, you know. So it's great sometimes. There's always one or two smart comments are right, but you just have to take it on the chin from the people.
I saw a lovely video of you pucking a ball around someone's garden over a hedge, I might add, for social distancing. So you talk about hurling. Do you play hurling with people as well then when you call to see them with the oil?
Not really. Just with that occasion, when the neighbours came out and asked me to puck a few balls and with the lads, like, you know. And look, I said I would. I was kind of quiet that day, so we started skipping balls into each different garden. So I had gloves on, but I took them off and someone put up and a comment on it, like, I should be wearing gloves, imagine. But again, no, it's just a bit of fun. Like, you know, I didn't think to get so many hits, but look, I suppose when people have nothing to do, they're watching their phones and stuff like that and commenting on it, like, you know, so it's good.
Dan, you spoke about the replayed matches last night. It was incredible. Did you have any deliveries in Cork today? Because I'd say they would be sick to see you around.
No, I don't think, no, Cork wouldn't be my area, to be honest. It'd be all the way from Waterford. So I go as far as the old bridge, but that'd be it, like, you know. So no, they'd be sick enough with you, but they got smacky day. They got their return on us, like, you know. So they did, like, you know. But that was just our day. They keep playing that match lately, so it's one of the best games, I suppose, ever. And to be involved in it was fantastic at the time. But you know, but it's just no. I go as far as John Bridge, like, you know, and then I turn back to Waterford.
Dan, that's why they played. Looking back at it, it was incredible. Did you watch it last night? Just being able to relive it and like, kind of look at. At G and your pomp, it was just incredible.
Yeah, because I didn't see it now last night. To be honest with you, I would have watched it not so long ago. But again, it was unbelievable. Don't think the way the hurling, with the commentary Eddie Brennan, he commented on the referee. The way the referee left the game go was unbelievable. You know, and the game, like, you know, first 10 minutes. If you looked at really closely, don't think Cork maybe could have got one or two goals, but they took their points and could have finished us off. But we stuck with it, like, you know, and we got goals that day, like, you know. It was a great game, like, I suppose, when John got sent off at half-time, or just after half-time, like, you know, we really galvanised. And, you know, I think the sending off maybe suited us. The Cork went long with the ball and our backs really were able to get on top of the Cork force, especially in the second half.
Dan, that Waterford team that you're on, so many characters, big names, people that gave us entertainment, but what was the dressing room like?
Yeah, unbelievable, you're on. It was unbelievable. I suppose all that, Dunica, he knows about all the dressing rooms and stuff, Marie, that it was unbelievable. We'd some, as I said, we'd some characters in there, with every fella was different. We'd some quiet lads, we'd some mad lads, we'd some lads that do their own thing. And Mull used to always go away, slap his legs, his toys, and they come out and he'd red raw. Like, another fella going, he'd say a few pale Marys and say it's the toys. Every fella was different characters, like, you know. And but we would really, really gelled well, to be honest with you. And just a pity we didn't get to the ultimate. Our ultimate aim was to win Ireland. We didn't do that, but we died trying to get there, like, you know. But we had fantastic characters in there, fantastic colours, to be honest with you.
Well, he certainly gave everybody watching lots of entertainment. Over the last while, because there has been no sport on, we are getting to see the old games and, you know, people talk about the 90s and the excitement of all the different teams that were winning then. And then, you know, we look at even the current era and people talk about how the game has evolved. But then we see your game from last night and like, that was a special time too. Like, how has the game evolved kind of over the time that you were playing and involved in?
I think the training has got a lot tougher off the field, to be honest with you, really. The gym stuff, the away from the field, the weights are lifting, pre-season is unbelievable. Like, you know, to be ready for the summertime in our time, we did the same thing. But the tactics of the game now has changed so dramatically, it's unbelievable. Like, you know, you've sweepers, you've two sweepers, you've lads that the full back line has to be able to, the full back has to be able to take a ball on the return and has to go with the ball the way the game is played. And you look at Limerick, who I think are the best team in the country this year so far, the way their full back line can play the hurling as well as Mark, and it's unbelievable. Back in our day, we probably didn't, our lad was supposed to mark his man, do his job and clear the ball. We're now, you have to win your mark your man, win the ball, lay it off, take your turn and go again. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's changed dramatically. The fitness levels have changed unbelievably. Like, you know, back in our day, full back was 6'3". Now he could be 5'9", 5'10", and be as good as the fella that was 6'3", because the pace of the game. Do you know, the everything has changed so dramatically. Even before I came into it, do you know, the weights were never involved. Next minute, the weights came into it. Now it's resistant band stuff, etc. Do you know? So it really has changed. Like, you know, it's going to change probably in 5 or 6 years' time again. Something else will come in again.
Looking back at last night's game, and you mentioned that there, the man-to-man kind of stuff. If you put yourself and Dermot O'Sullivan in an octagon, people would have paid per view to watch it. It was incredible. But there's always the respect moments. There's a brilliant photo of two of you kind of hunched down, just looking at each other. You know, you went at it hard, but there was respect there, Dan.
Yeah, definitely, Dunica. We would have had, I would have supposed, with the Cork lads, Dunica would have played a lot of Hackney Cup against them all that was up, with whether it was Middleton, CBS or Northmont. So I would have started maybe underage or all the ways up, like, you know, so we would have a lot of respect for each other, obviously, off the field. But on the field, you go to war and you shake hands beforehand, you shake hands after, you park it, like, you know. Cork had their victories over Waterford, we had ours over Cork, like, you know. But again, we had huge respect for the Cork players. And, like, you know, I'm still doing a bit of hurling, don't you, Ken? I would meet a lot of, we play a lot of challenge games for the Cork clubs, and we'd always bump into the lads, whether they're watching the matches or whether they're on charge of teams, and we'd have the same respect again, like, you know, for each other, like, you know. So, again, for both counties, we had huge respect for each other. Like, you know, the thing about the Cork went on to win Ireland, but Waterford didn't. That was the big thing, like, you know.
We definitely watch the two of you in the octagon now. We're so starved as sports. Dan, like, you know, things have changed. And, you know, when you do something for the first time, whether it was Clare winning a Munster title for the first time, or you guys, or, you know, Wexford in Leinster, do you think the provincial still hold the same value as they did maybe in decades gone by?
Yeah, definitely, Marie. I think they're unbelievably, a Munster medal is, with respect to Leinster and the league, is the probably second highest medal you could get, like, you know. And the competition in Munster, especially the last number of years, where anyone can win Munster, you know, even the games back when we were playing, like, you know, the trilogy with Limerick and Tipperary, that kind of stuff in 07, that, you know, there was nothing between any of the teams in the noughties either. We were just lucky with the bunch of players we had, and Cork were with the bunch of players they had. But up to this year, they've got to go ahead the championship. Like, any team in Munster can win Munster, like, you know. And to win a Munster medal is unbelievable. You see, the Limerick didn't do it with a while, and when they did it, they celebrated big time with the numbers on the field there and in Páirc Cuíve, and Cork have done it, like, you know. And Waterford haven't won one since 10, so I guarantee you they'd love to win Munster now, Reece, so they would, because it's 10 since we won it. You know, we're in 2020 now, like, you know, so it's 10 years obviously since the Waterford won one last.
Dan, you touched on it there, 3 All-Stars, 4 Munster titles, Hurler of the Year in 2007, and you're probably going to hate me for saying it, but you said it yourself, no All-Ireland. What do you think was the biggest challenge for that Waterford team to make the next step?
Yeah, the biggest challenge, I suppose, Dunic, it's unbelievable down here, like, we had such a good team, and that we didn't get over the line. And but again, it was, I think we met some massive teams in Kilkenny and Cork, to be honest with you, again, when I was playing, like, you know, they were phenomenal. Like, you know, we got to the Munster final in 08, and, like, you're looking at Jackie Terrell, JJ Delaney, Tommy Welch, Henry Shefflin, Eddie Brennan. You know, you go back to the Ben O'Connors, Brian Cochran, you know, the half back line Cork had, like, they were phenomenal players. So they were, like, you know. And I just think sometimes the Cork players could win the big games, Kilkenny lads could win their big games, don't you, Cam? When they did it with Kellam playing well, where we had to win our games, we'd have to have 15, 16, 17 players playing well, like, you know. And it didn't happen for us on occasions like that, like, you know, especially in semi-finals, like, you know. But for Waterford to get over the line now, like, you know, the work they have to do to compete with the Limericks and the other teams now, that, like, you know, like, Clare this year are changed under Brian Lohan, like, you know. And, you know, Limerick have missed out last year, Cork have new management back this year, like, you know. So Galway have new management in, like, you know, and Davey wants to win that, and probably unlucky not to get over Tipperary last year. So the battle for the Windy All Ireland is unbelievable at the moment.
And Dan, before we let you go, would you be happy enough to see hurling come back behind closed doors, or is it a waste of time if it's not in front of crowds?
Yeah, I would have been quite maybe played behind, but I, when you think about it, I often played a challenge game behind closed doors, like, you know, coming up the championship, and you'd hear the echo of the ball or the clash of the ash, that kind of thing, and there was no atmosphere in them games, like, you know, so I'd be in favour for getting the close back doing their bit first and see how they get on with that transition. Obviously they have to be changes made to get the club players back, maybe do the warm ups themselves, come to the matches, play the games and have the showers at home after, that kind of stuff, like, you know. But again, I think the inter-county stuff is going to struggle this year to be fixed. I wouldn't be a fan of maybe holding it behind closed doors, but the thing in the GAA is a lot involved with a lot of sponsorship with television rights and stuff like that, like, you know, so I might have to do something to get a few pound in, like, you know. But I wouldn't be a big fan of playing games behind closed doors. Like, it was hard to get lads up to go to, and you'd even see the matches, even some of the games played behind closed doors there. United played behind closed doors there, and there was no atmosphere there whatsoever, like, you know, in the Europa Cup. So there was no atmosphere. Sorry, but it'll be the same in Hurling.
Yeah. Look, Dan, thanks so much for joining us. There's a lovely text in just before we go. You're a pure gentleman, this man says, from Eric in Waterford. His dad died a few years ago and you came to the wake and you gave them a Waterford jersey. So fair play. You are still making a mark on people.
Yeah, look, like I said, they're cycling the bike, like, doing a smile, but it's when I get a chance. So,
thanks. Fair play. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much. That's all we've time for, Donica.
I know we're gone already, mate. Yeah. Game on 2FM.